Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Highfalutin Ski Bum Podcast. This is number 44. It is your host, Mario and Brian. Mario, what's going on?
I think it's 44B.
This is 44B, yes. We had some sort of technical issue that we discovered about 45 minutes into the first recording of this podcast, so we are doing it all over again because we skipped last week and we knew that you guys could not stand missing us 2 weeks in a row.
We're trying to practice. We're doing 2 days, man.
We're doing 2 a days, yep.
2 a days.
Spring training.
So things are good this week. I'm excited to be back in the studio.
Yes, back in the studio for the first time in a few weeks.
After being in the car, we were road warriors.
We had some issues last week, so we couldn't put out a podcast. So we're back. We're excited. We're ready to do this.
2 days. We're back for 2 days.
So, yes. So thank you so much for listening. And you can check out all of our information at skibumpodcast.com. You can see us on Twitter, twitter.com/skibumpodcast. Facebook, facebook.com/skibumpodcast. Instagram.com/skibumpodcast, or subscribe and rate us on Stitcher if you're an Android person, or iTunes, iOS store, there as well. So please go there, rate us, subscribe. We really appreciate it.
We're just everywhere.
We're everywhere. We're trying to be everywhere, yeah. We're going to work on Snapchat and Periscope. We're doing that next, and whatever kind of new social media thing we have to be on, we'll
Snapscope
be there too.
Or Parachat.
Parachat.
Whatever comes up.
Mirrorscope. Whatever. We'll do it.
So what are we going to talk about this week?
We are going to talk about us, the bums, getting new toys.
Nice. Deja vu style,
ooh,
right?
Ooh, it's like Christmas all over again.
We're going to do it deja vu style.
Deliciousness. Yes.
But first.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-mm-mm. The sweet sound.
A little weekly flavor.
Instead of having to do that, make up some sounds in the car.
Yes. The melodious sounds
melodious.
Of car noises. So, yes, Mario, what are you consuming today?
So, my consumption has been Dogfish 90 Minute, one of my good old favorite standbys. Like the 60 Minute. 60 Minute's good if you can have a few. 90 is if you're just going to have like one or two, like you shut it down. And the 120 is just like, that's like the knockout punch. So, the 90 is solid. There's a lot of places around that have it on draft. So it's nice, not too hoppy, not too stout. It's nice though.
The 90 is really, really good.
Very good.
Tasty stuff, yeah.
How about you, Bri?
So I'm going back to one of our throwback beers from our lovely Ski Bum Week, which we had back in December. It is a Hill Farmstead Leaves of Grass.
Nice.
And it is the November 22nd, 2015 edition of that beer.
I love how they put the date. Like, people collecting them, like, well, that's the November 20th, 22nd.
Yeah, they don't mess around at Hill Farmstead, as we know. Yeah, this is a Belgian-inspired brown ale, open-fermented in an oak tank.
Nice.
Oak tank.
Oak tank.
I don't know what an oak tank is.
Oak bread bowl.
Like an oak swimming pool, perhaps?
Yeah, I think so.
Or it's like a military
They said
vehicle.
Open-fermented?
Open fermented.
So it's got to be like, you know, where the I Love Lucy, where she's like stomping the grapes. Like,
yeah.
A big oak thing, like maybe like that.
Oak tank.
So they open fermented. So.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
They're not messing around at Hill Farmstead, that's for sure. So.
And that's when we didn't try because we couldn't, right?
Nope. This is when you had to just buy and hope for the best. And luckily, the day we were there was the day they released this beer. So we were able to actually pick up a bottle of it.
I wonder if people are like collecting it, like, yep, so here's November 22nd, here's the other release.
I'm sure there's some maniac who just has, like, you know, thousands of bottles of Hill Farmstead beer just hanging around in their cellar.
Yeah.
Like in the Cask of the Amontillado by Edgar Allan Poe.
Or like in Silence of the Lambs, collecting stuff, you know. Just saying. People collect different things.
People do. People are weird like that.
Baseball cards.
They do.
Tonka trucks.
Speaking of baseball, though, we have some ski news.
We have some little ski news.
It's a little bit of ski news. Yes, and speaking of baseball, so we're recording this on Wednesday, February 10th. Starting tomorrow, on the 11th, Fenway Park is going to have their big air event.
Big air.
What is a big air event, you may be asking? So, in the middle of Fenway Park Center Field, they are building a 140-foot ramp.
Damn.
Yes, roughly four times the height of the Green Monster. So they're building a giant
four
ramp.
Four times the height.
Yes. Damn. They're turning into a snow-covered ramp, and they're going to have the world's best free skiers and boarders there. So accelerating at 35 to 40 miles per hour, they will descend to 52 feet, and there, at roughly the elevation of the upper deck seats, that the big air competition, they will be flipping and spinning and twisting and be landing right near where in 2 months will be home plate.
That's nuts.
Yeah, so that's starting tomorrow. And what makes this really cool is that, you know, usually the only time they have events like this is the Olympics or the X Games. And the Olympics is only every 4 years. The X Games are usually in Aspen. I think the last couple of years they've always been there.
Actually, this is the one that they said it was a trial event for the Olympics, but it's not going to be part of the Olympics next
it's not, huh?
Winter, yeah. This is the one. Remember there was a story we had a while back?
Yeah.
They said they kicked it out. They voted. They're going to have it for snowboards, but not for skis.
Oh, okay. But what's cool about this is, I mean, this is the first event they're going to be doing in a big stadium in the middle of the city.
That's nice.
So, you know, they're anticipating 25,000 fans to attend Thursday and Friday, which is roughly 10 times the average for any sort of event at a mountain resort. So this is going to, you know, this is going to expose, you know, skiing and boarding and, you know, these sort of events to kids, teenagers, even adults that are in cities that aren't anywhere near the mountain that usually wouldn't even bother, but now they become intrigued and may become lifelong fans.
You want to go? It's $50. StubHub.
Nope. I don't want to go. I'll be perfectly honest. I want to sit home and relax this weekend because we have big, big plans the weekend after.
This would be so sweet to it. They have the seating chart on StubHub, and they have it looks like a muffler, like just the design. If you take Fenway Park and you start from like behind home plate, it looks like they lay a muffler out, like a enormous sized muffler across the field all the way to center field, and that's the whole ramp.
The ramp, right?
It's crazy.
That's so awesome.
Wow. Wow, the highest tickets that they have there, what do they got? 130, that's not bad. Field box, 82. You throw snowballs right at the guy.
That really isn't too bad.
When they're up in the air, you get to peg them.
Gun them. Yeah.
Gun them with a snowball.
So they're doing this on Thursday and Friday, and that's actually good because if they would have waited till the weekend, it's going to get cold up there.
It should be cold. Good.
It's supposed to be about 10 degrees, I think, for the high on Saturday up there.
In your face, Boston. That's what I said.
Listen, it breeds a tougher people. That's for sure. Tougher people come from colder environments.
It is the winter.
Fact.
Just saying.
Yes.
It's the winter.
And to make this ramp, they're actually using Killington Snowmaking Team are the ones down there helping out.
Wow.
And I saw a post somewhere. I forget if it was on Killington Zone or on, you know, maybe the comments for the article. They're like, hey, Killington Snowmakers, get back to Killington. They need snow there.
Make the snow
for the season,
where you
not
live.
For 2 days. Yeah.
That's right.
So that should be a pretty cool event. So if you guys are there, if you guys are going, tweet us, hit us up on Facebook. Let us know what it's like and if it's, you know, what's going on, if it's cool, if it's fun. And, yeah, let us know.
If anybody's outside the stadium and can see it, just take a video and then post it up. That'd be cool.
Periscope it.
Periscope it.
Ooh.
That'd be awesome to see.
Yeah.
So next up we got the Collinsons. The Collinson Power Siblings dominate podium at Red Bull Cold Rush. So we talked about Red Bull Cold Rush. They brought it back this year after, what is it, like a three-year hiatus?
I think so, yeah.
And they brought it back, and it's just a big mountain competition where they do, like, cliffs. They do, like, backcountry skiing. Like, they do big mountain. So they do all these cool, like, extreme. And it's not even, like, one event. It's, like, a series of events. Like, it's pretty crazy. I think, Brian, you ran through it that one time. But basically, so Red Bull sponsors it. They brought it back this year. It was at Revelstoke. And Angel Collinson, for the women, she took first place, stealing the show with her first run. said, picking apart a technical cliff band and straight lining out the bottom of at a suicidal speed. So it looks freaking... They have a picture of her, like, jumping off a cliff. It looks terrifyingly awesome.
Yeah, that's an insane picture.
And then her brother, Johnny, he laid down some clean lines, massive 360s, and a backflip to earn second place in the men's division. And they said he had a bloody face with a knee sando. So he caught himself probably jumping off a cliff.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they were brother and sister, and they said the two kids were like made to be pro skiers.
Yeah, they're both crushing it this year, and Angel especially. I mean, she's blowing up this year. I mean, she's been on the cover of all the different ski magazines. She's been in the TGR Paradise Waits movie. She was in the Warren Miller movie as well. I mean, she's really, this is her coming out this year. She's an amazing skier and getting some great exposure. So congrats to them and congrats to all the competitors, because it seems like it was just an epic event, and everyone had a great time. So it'll be cool. Great. Hopefully they'll put that up on the Red Bull TV channel.
Definitely. So check it out. Got to look for that, because
that'd be fun to watch.
I mean, it was Red Bull, so I imagine it's probably going to be up there soon, right?
So they have 37 cameras on everybody at all times.
Maybe they have the one that you Periscope now.
Yeah, I don't know if they had that running. That would have made a lot of sense if they had that rolling at that time, yeah.
Because they had it on the X Games, right?
They did, yeah.
Cool.
All right, next up. So this is from the Robb Report, which I don't know if you guys are familiar with it. It is it's pretty much just a collection of baller things. And the reason I have a subscription to this newsletter now was they had a free giveaway a few weeks ago. It's still going to be running now. From I guess Bodie Miller is now, I don't know, partial owner or sponsored by Bomber Skis, which is an Italian boutique ski company. And they had a competition, a giveaway of, you know, a giveaway package. It was like skis and maybe a jacket or something. And so I, you know, entered that contest, and now I'm subscribed to their newsletter, which comes out pretty frequently. And I haven't had the heart to delete it because it's got all kinds of really cool stuff, like aspirational things. And one of the articles they had this week was the 10 best heliski adventures on Earth.
Earth, man.
And the first one on the list, now they didn't really, I don't think they rated this, you know, 1 to 10.
This is the regular Earth, not the flat Earth.
Not the flat Earth from 2 weeks ago.
From B.O.B.?
B.O.B. So the first one on the list is Big Horn at Revelstoke, which, I mean, the pictures are just absolutely unreal. And part of the package there is you stay at the Big Horn Lodge, and you can have up to 16 people there. You have to reserve the whole thing. And prices start at about $53,200 for a week. Plus, on top of that, you got to pay your heliski service costs, which are on average an additional $1,200 per person per day.
Damn.
Yes, but that includes your breakfast. It includes a four-course gourmet dinner, well, drinks.
Say, all these places, I guess they're supposed to have really good heliski, mm-hmm. but the places are phenomenal looking. So
oh, yeah.
It's like a total luxury package.
Yeah.
Like the best of the skiing and the best of the accommodations.
Yeah, it's got like an exercise pool, pool tables, home theater, ski room, outdoor hot tub, fireplaces. There's 8 staterooms.
This is one with the balconies. Coming to America thing, right? The chef.
Is the one. It's pretty much you're living like the prince in Coming to America. Eddie Murphy's character.
Girls are washing you.
Yeah. Prince Akeem. You're pretty much living like Prince Akeem in the mountains.
That's right.
Yeah.
In Zamunda.
In northern Zamunda, which is Canada. So a few other places that they mention, Tordrillo up in Alaska. They mention a place in Val d'Isere. They mention
Telluride.
There's
Telluride's funny. They don't show any accommodation. Yeah. They just show like all the helicopter and skiing. It's like you're just skiing.
Yeah, a lot of those, you know, those you can stay in Telluride, and then you just take the, you know, the walk or the drive over to where the helipad is, and it takes you up. While this one at the Bighorn, I mean, you're pretty much going to this destination, and the helicopter's taking you, you know, from the from the resort right to the mountains where you're skiing.
It's nice.
It's pretty incredible.
They're like, we don't need to show you the town. They have legal weed. You can figure it out.
You'll figure it out, man. Yeah, and then, of course, Japan. So there's
Hokkaido. Did you get to the one after Hokkaido, the Alpina Stad ski safari in Switzerland?
Oh, that just, I mean.
The place looks amazing.
Yeah, it just looks like a super massive Swiss chalet in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, the swanky, that entranceway is freaking crazy.
Just gorgeous.
Looks like a cruise ship.
And it's next, It's near Zermatt, right?
I don't know, but even the outside of it, it's like there's nothing around, just that big-ass house.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Unbelievable. So, yeah, we'll post this link, and you can check it out, and you can drool. And if anyone has two extra spots, perhaps, if they're going up to Bighorn at Revelstoke, and they need two more people, hit us up, skibumpodcast.com. You know, send us an email, skibumpodcast@gmail.com. We'd be happy to be your plus two, and maybe we'll podcast from there. We'll have you as special guests. We'll hook it up. So, yeah, get on that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know what I just realized? I left the cake balls.
Oh, yeah. We ate a bunch of those.
Good.
There's still like four of them left, though.
Oh, that's good, because I ate a bunch, too. So.
Yeah, there's not too many left.
All right.
When's our next batch coming?
It's Auntie Leanna's, so I think it's every 3 months.
Every 3 months. Okay.
Those are good. Those are the dark chocolate rose. They were
the
good.
Rose was weird, I got to tell you.
I liked it.
I didn't hate it, but it was weird.
It was like herby. I was like, all right, I don't feel like I'm eating something that sweet. It was like kind of yin and yang. It was good.
The cake itself, though, that was like dark chocolate, right?
Yeah.
It was a dark chocolate cake ball with the dark chocolate on the outside.
And rose petal.
With the rose, edible flavor. Rose petal inside.
Yeah. It was interesting.
It was good. Aunt Leanna, you're doing an awesome job. We love your cake balls.
I was surprised to get that little package. I was like, what is this? I didn't order anything. I'm like, cake balls. All right.
Isn't our next one like a bourbon one?
Yeah.
Or a bacon one?
I don't even remember. It's the beauty of it is that it's a surprise. It's like, all right. I didn't even remember about when I was getting the cake balls.
Just showed up. It was delicious.
Delicious. So I'm glad you ate them.
Oh, yes.
Should have eaten all those things.
Yeah.
That's all right. They'll be there when we get back.
Geek bowls.
So Killington, history, space, Killington in peak form. So this article actually talks about, I think you, Brian found this. This is, a book, right? Based on a book.
It's based on a book, and it was an article in the Burlington Free Press. A week or two ago.
It talks about a lot of the history of Killington, the start of it, and through the ages. So some pretty cool facts. I don't know if they get up to the fact that they built the Peak Lodge too small for the people that are there every weekend.
That'll be in the revised edition of the book.
Or the fact that they created a massive shit show with the way it's run. But good food, just saying. But other than that, the one thing that I love about this, they talk about in the 70s, they had record-setting seasons with more than 200 days on snow.
Ugh.
Damn.
It's beautiful.
Damn.
They're hitting day 97, I think, today.
Wow.
But, yeah, the article is amazing. It talks about how the peak was first, you know, allegedly first scaled in 1763, and how the resort itself opened up on December 13, 1958, They had 8,000 visitors that season, and they sold lift tickets out of a converted chicken coop to 1987, where they had their first season with over 1 million ski visitors. And also talking about how it is the it has more lifts, more skiable terrain, and higher elevation than any other eastern ski area, while being simultaneously recognized as the best place in the country to learn to ski or snowboard.
Nice.
And it's also one of the nation's most environmentally responsible operations.
Cowpow.
Believe the hype.
Cowpow.
So if you're an East Coast skier, you'll appreciate that. And we'll have links to the show notes. And you can order the book. And if you want to order us a copy, too, that would be great.
Yes.
Put it on our little coffee table in front of our fireplace.
Got to add it to our wish list.
Yeah.
Amazon wish list.
And we're still keeping on the East Coast here with this next story. The Vista Lodge Residence Club at Blue Mountain in the Poconos was just announced last week. So if anyone's ever skied in the Poconos, Blue Mountain is probably your best bet. It's a pretty decent mountain. It's got the highest vertical in the Poconos. And one thing you'll notice when you're driving there is a whole lot of nothing anywhere near that mountain.
Nice.
There is seclusion. There's a post office. There's a diner, there's a ski shop, and that's pretty much it. And like one blinking light.
It's like a ski camp where you can concentrate.
You could say that. If you really had to, you could say that. So it's there's no amenities at this place. I mean, the mountain, they just built a new lodge there a couple of years ago.
You're saying there's no hotels around, right?
There is nothing. I mean, you got to go probably at least a half an hour to find a hotel.
So everybody just goes for the day and then leaves.
That's all you can do,
sleep in a car or something like that. Camper?
Everyone in their
camper man.
everyone in their jeans from Jersey shows up and skis there for the day and then goes back home.
Jeans and gaiters.
So what they're doing is they are building this new Vista Lodge residence club. And it, you know, they have just the artist renderings right now, but it's a pretty swanky condo lodge complex. And they're looking to, I guess they're trying to get the funding and everything set up and get commitments by the end of this year and hope to have something built by the end of 2018. So if you're looking to have, you know, you really want some ski in, ski out property, don't want to make the drive all the way up to, you know, Vermont or the Adirondacks, this might be in your wheelhouse. So we'll post the link and in the show notes, and we'll keep you posted as more information comes out, because this is just was just announced last week, so it's kind of hot off the presses, and we'll see where this goes, because this could be a pretty cool thing for people in the Pocono area.
They must have had an influx of money to do this, because it's been there forever. So,
yeah.
And the market's there. I mean, people are willing to – I mean, the economy's getting better. People are spending a little bit more money, you know. And it's nice to have a place to get away, because, you know, we're hitting Valentine's weekend, and it's funny. Like, I'm hearing all these reports about, like, the skyrocketing price of, like, hotels. So the more hotels, you know, is the market for that.
People will fill them. Yep.
But – next up, we got Centrophone. So it's an iPhone video experiment. So there is a video that one of my buddies turned me on to, and Brian and I were just like blown away by it. You watch it, and basically, it's a there. It's somebody that's skiing with a parachute and an iPhone that is mounted on the parachute line, such that it points at him all the time. I guess you could do the same thing with like a GoPro, but basically while he's skiing, the parachute is, it's like a little baby parachute is tethered behind him and he's skiing, and it's pretty cool because it always points at him and it's like flipping around. And I watched it again while we were rebooting, you know, for the reboot.
Technical difficulties.
Of this podcast, but I watched it again. It's like 2 minutes and 41 seconds, and it's cool music, and you see this fresh pow, and the view of it is actually really cool. I actually want to do that.
Did they say where they filmed it at?
No, I didn't look.
It was somewhere in Scandinavia, wasn't it?
Was it?
The footage is beautiful, and yeah, it's cool. Like, I like to they show, you know, the good footage, and this guy, he's skiing with one pole and with this, you know, the strings
tethered to him.
Tethered to him, yeah. And I guess, too, you could probably tether it to like a chest harness or a backpack strap or your backpack or belt or something if you didn't want to have, you know, if you want to have your two hands free to ski with.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they did a really cool job. And I guess on his website or on his YouTube channel, he has this video but also has the how he came about with this process, experiments, and some of the outtakes. There's a cool shot at the end where they show him crashing.
Yeah.
You know, it's cool seeing it from that point of view.
But, well, they show him, he does it like a jump, and it's this massive jump. And at first, because of the way the camera's moving, it's like rotating a little bit around, but it's still staying like balanced, looking right at him.
Mm-hmm.
So from the angle you get, it doesn't look like that big of a jump. And then he's like going, I guess he's coming down, and the way the camera switches, it's like, holy shit, that's a huge jump. He just jumped like 20 feet in the, you know.
Yeah, you can't tell at first.
It's crazy. But it's a really clever way to do other like filming. And after I saw this, I started going online seeing, oh, is there a place I could buy a parachute, you know, to do this? And they actually have parachutes that people use when they're surfing. So they put the parachute up, and you're talking about not a parachute, a kite. They actually get these kites, and they put them up, and then they go surfing. So the kite's way up there. And the camera's, like, not as far from them, but the kite's still up there, way out there. And they're surfing with it tethered to their board.
Really?
And these dudes are, like, getting this footage of themselves. And I'm like, that is freaking ingenious, man. It's a unique way to do that.
That is really cool, yeah.
You got to look, do a search on, like, YouTube kite kite filming and stuff like that. And you'll see the surfboard things just blew me away. I was like, wow, that's, like, a really... I guess if you're alone, you know, you want to film yourself, kind of good way to do it.
Kind of figure out a way, yeah.
Yeah.
That is really cool.
And then, you got the next one.
Yes, we'll post the link to that. And I think we have one more story. Now, this isn't really a new story, but we just encountered it again and wanted to share it with everybody. So in Sweden, lovely Sweden, they have a McDonald's ski-through restaurant. So in the popular Swedish ski resort of Lindvallen, about 450 kilometers northwest of Stockholm, skiers can order hamburgers and French fries through a special window and ski off, munching as they go. I mean, it looks like a like a regular large, you know, like a gondola, like the gondola house, the gondola lodge, you know, where the
like the ski up and ski out. Ski
you just kind of ski up to it, and you roll in, get your order, and ski away.
Fries, a shake.
And they also have 140 seats inside, so you can, you know, kind of take your skis off and hang out inside there. But it's right on the mountain, and you can get your Royale with cheese and get back onto the lifts, which is pretty cool.
So some of the photos they have on that article, they have a whole line of snowmobiles that are like waiting for the drive-through, which is pretty awesome. And they have another video where it's like all whited out, and then like the snow is like really blown, and then it clears up a little bit, and you see the McSki. It's awesome. You get a little McLovin at the McSki.
The golden arches, the beacon shining through.
Oh, you know what we could set up?
The golden,
the golden arcs. The golden arcs.
McDowell's.
McDowell's. McBoard.
McBoard.
Boom. McBoard. For snowboarders.
Love it.
Oh, how you like that? So, yeah, we got into a discussion about like other stuff.
Well, yeah, because of there's at North Star in the Lake Tahoe area, they have a ski-through Starbucks.
Nice.
Which they came out a couple years ago. It was the first one to have that.
So where do you ski through on that? Because if you're going down a mountain right after, that coffee's going to shake
everything. It's right in the middle of like a Black Diamond bumper.
That'd be awesome.
You're just like, oh my God, my cappuccino's going everywhere. I think it's kind of at the bottom. So you kind of ski through, grab your drink, have a couple sips, and get out in the gondola or the chairlift and go up.
You should be right at the top of like some cliff mogul-ridden thing called Devil's Anus or something like that.
Devil's Anus. Or like... Was it Gun Barrel at Heavenly?
Yes.
That nasty right double barrel bump
gun
run.
Coffee.
How's your macchiato now?
That would be the trick. You got to order a full coffee and make it to the bottom without spilling a drop.
Wasn't that a TV show or a movie where like the kid's taking like his or her driving test and the guy puts the cup of coffee on the dash, and if the coffee spills, he fails, and if it doesn't,
yes. What was that?
Passes.
That thing was like
teetering on the edge, and somehow it was all right. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
so now, awesome. All right. So we got McDonald's and we got Starbucks. Now, if you could have any sort of ski through service, what would you have?
I'm sticking with the waffles.
Waffles, like the waffle cabin,
because the waffle cabins are already on the mountain. You just got to move them to a place that you could ski and ski out. Because right now, just where I've seen that they put them, it's like behind the lift, and I'm like, no, I want it before I get on the lift, because I want to eat it on the lift. It'd be great.
Yeah, two birds, one stone right
there. If they had it right there while I'm online at the lift, I could pay while I'm waiting, and then just keep going through line.
Well, you know how, like, certain areas, they'll have the lift line kind of broken out? It's like quad, triple, double, single. They have a waffle line.
Waffle line, yes.
So the waffle kind of drops into your lap as you're getting onto the chair.
They have
the
somebody
chair.
Pay and somebody give you the waffle. Like, what do you want? Run back to the thing if they have to?
Yeah.
It's a good idea.
Or they could, when you're like doing like skeet shooting, how they have like the thrower?
Yes.
They could put the waffle in the thrower and like pull and like launches out.
They got to get you on the lift then while you're on the lift.
Use your pole to kind of poke at and grab your waffle.
Stab it.
And it's like a kebab.
Boom.
Waffle kebabs. Waffle kebabs.
You know what I do? I would just stand under the lift trying to get the free waffles that fall.
Yeah.
I'm like, waffle look at this remnants. Man. I got free waffles all over this place.
I like the waffle kebab.
How about you? What else would you?
Well,
would you ski through?
I think Colorado has a lot of possibilities that they can really start rolling
Colorado.
With. They could have like a almost like a car wash, but it would be kind of like full of like weed smoke.
Ooh.
So you can kind of get through, get like a little vape action going
like
on.
Heavenly Air at Heavenly Air.
McVape.
Something. McVape.
You go through the McVape.
McSnoop Dogs. Snoop's Vape Land.
Or have you like. Just
ski right through it.
Yeah.
Like, hey y'all, what's up, man?
Have the gondola go through there, you know?
Oh, a real gondola.
A real gondola.
Oh, that you don't have to ski through. You're just ride up.
It's
That's
right
a ride
there.
Up.
That's a ride up, yeah.
I like that.
A little vape through. It's not a bad idea. Colorado can make that happen. Any one of those places.
Every other
could.
One is like, people are like timing it so they get like the vape gondola.
You can choose, yeah. Well, again, like the line. You can get in the vape line, the non-vape line.
So remember at Mount Snow, they had the Bluebird lift. Mm-hmm. And there was one, so the Bluebird lift was one of those covered lifts with the
just. Yeah, it was a 6-person chair, but it had that plastic kind of dome.
Yeah.
You pulled down over to stay warm.
And it was blue, so they called it the Bluebird. But they had one lift on there that was the gold one, oh. The golden lift. So that one could be like the, you know, everybody's waiting for the smoke gondola.
That was so funny. When that thing opened up, remember how anal they were about everything?
Oh,
he had like cameras on everybody, like, do not smoke, do not spit, do not breathe.
Because people
not.
Are douches. They're like riding on it and scratching on it like day one. It's like, well, yeah, now you got charged like $600 to replace the thing and you deserve it.
Well, they were like yanking people off and like giving them tickets and taking their lift passes away if they were messing with, if they were smoking, if they were, you know, doing
whatever.
They were
taking video of all that, which is, you know what? I'm glad. I mean, people need to have a little respect.
Big brother's watching, man.
That's what ruins the mountains. That's what ruins the lifts. That's what ruins it for everybody.
This is why we can't have nice things.
Exactly.
Three assholes from Jersey.
And I like nice things. Yeah. So
that about wraps up the old ski news for the week. And now...
Good old ski news.
We are on to our main topic.
So what are we talking about again?
We're talking about the bums have got new toys.
Got new toys.
Ooh, yeah, it's like Christmas all over again.
That's right.
On the 37th day of Christmas, my true love bought for
me. Every day is like Christmas.
That's how we roll, brother.
That's how we roll.
That's how we do it. All
right.
Why don't you start off? What is your new toy that you picked up this week?
So my new toy are the Smith Outdoor Tech Wireless Audio Chips.
Smith?
The Smith is... they used to be Outdoor Tech, and I guess this year Smith branded with them. Good move, because I tell you, these things are... I said to Brian... I'm still holding true. These are the best accessory purchase I've made skiing ever.
Really?
Ever.
Okay.
In the world. They're great. So they're the little chips. So the little chips are the little speakers that you drop into your ear part of your
helmet. Pads, right? It's kind of like the ear pads over
there. Helmet pad insert. So I guess if you have Smith ear pads, Smith helmet, they have like a zip liner. Okay. A zip ear piece that you can just slide them in.
I think most helmets, I think, have that now. Some
they
sort.
Have something.
I know
yeah.
Mine has. I have a Giro. I guess that's how it's pronounced. Giro. It has like a Velcro, so you know it has the ear piece, which is I guess almost like a diamond shape, sort of. The top of it, there's like a Velcro opening. It's like a pocket, so you can.
Right.
It has the holes on the inside, so you can drop the speaker in there, and it would.
Right.
Work the same way.
Yeah, mine was kind of the same. You pull them out. I have a Salomon helmet, and it had speakers in it, but they were wired. And I broke the cord that attached the helmet to the iPhone like twice just by ripping it, you know, just getting it tangled on something. And after a while, it's just kind of like it is a little bit cumbersome. It's something you have to think about. And you really can't answer a phone. Like, you don't have... you know, speaker in there, a microphone. So these things actually have a microphone built in. So Brian called me and I answered and I was still skiing. I was like, I just touched the side of my head and dude, I'm talking to him, which is pretty awesome. But the way they work is, so they're the little speakers. You put them in your earpieces, and then the backs of them, you know, the entire back is a big button. So
the outside of the speaker, right?
The outside.
Right.
So all you have to do is, with your glove, you just touch it. Like, you touch it once really quick. You touch it, you know, twice for, you know, once really quick, we'll do the volume up. Twice really quick, volume down. Or actually, reverse that. Once really quick, volume down. Twice really quick, volume up. You hold it down. It goes to the next song. That's on the left side. On the right side, if you get a call, you click it, and it answers the call. So, and then it has a microphone built in, which I guess you said I sounded pretty clear.
Yeah, it was fun.
And it sounded fine to me, and I didn't really have to yell or anything like that. It was awesome.
That's really cool. So your phone wasn't even anywhere near your face then?
No, it was away. It was in my jacket. I didn't have to unzip, and I didn't have to take my gloves off.
That's so cool, yeah.
So it really was, I gotta say, it was very easy to use. I was surprised.
That's pretty awesome.
And I think I mentioned to you that I ordered from backcountry.com, and I got one pair, and I got it on like a Monday, and we were going skiing on leaving Friday, and I was like, I really want them for the weekend. I got them in. They wouldn't charge. So I was like, I called them. I chatted with them online. Really nice. They're like, we'll send them to you next day so that you can have them to ski. I was like, that's awesome.
Backcountry is awesome like that. If you guys are ordering anything, you know, highly recommend them. Their customer service is great.
So they sent it to me the next day, and they said, when you get back from your ski trip, mail the other ones back. So I dropped them in the mail. It's awesome. They sent me the label and everything. It was great.
Yeah, that's the one thing in the reviews that people said is a little sketchy. Sometimes they don't charge right, or they have some technical glitches. But when they do work, they're supposed to be just, you know, fantastic.
These worked fine all weekend, so.
Cool. And what's the battery life on that, on those things? Have you tested it?
I charged it. Extent? Well, they say charge it for at least 2.5 hours, and it keeps a charge, I think they say, about 6 to 8 hours.
Oh, wow. So it's a full day of skiing.
Full day of skiing. But I used it the first day for most of the day, shut it down like near the end of the day, and then I put it on the next day, and I still had plenty of battery. I had like a little bit over half battery by the time I started the next day.
That's great.
So it really lasted a lot. It was pretty good.
Nice. You said too, it's kind of like it's more of an ambient noise than having earphones or big noise canceling headphones or something on.
Yeah, with the drop in the speakers that, you know, you have in your ear pad of your helmet, that ambient music is great because you could still talk to people and you can have like a conversation and hear what's going on around you. So you're not cut off from the rest of the world.
It's kind
of
like you said before, like having speakers out, like outside, you know,
on
like
the mountain,
on the mountain that are playing something. Yeah.
I actually forget it's on because sometimes I think it's just noise, like music playing in the background.
Yeah.
And it's really like coming from my head, and it's like, so I you kind of just don't pay attention to it. You're like, oh yeah, this is my own music that I'm playing.
That's
kind of
cool.
All right. So what do you got? What's your big toy?
So
I know you got a big one.
Yeah. So I finally, made the decision last weekend, and I bought a new pair of skis.
Yeah.
Finally committed. So
you get the slow clap.
Yeah.
It's about time, man.
I'll take it. So originally I was planning on buying a new pair of skis during Ski Bum Week back in December. But unfortunately we had awful conditions. The big demo day we were supposed to go to was canceled because of said terrible conditions.
Wow. Right.
So I didn't really know what to buy. I couldn't commit to anything. So back in that that same week, there was one day we got a couple runs in on some demo skis. One of the ones that I skied on were the Nordica Enforcers. They were a dynamite pair of skis. They got rated by a couple different ski magazines as, you know, best ski. Liked them. Wanted to try a few other things. By the time I had made a decision that I wanted to get them, they were out of stock everywhere. I
mean, you really liked them. I remember you talking about.
I really liked them, and I mean, people fell in love with these skis, and they got sold out everywhere. So I couldn't find them in my size, and I did a little research online, and I found out that Nordica, because they were sold out and are a smart business company, decided to release the 2017 skis at like the end of January.
That's awesome.
And so in addition to the 100mm underfoot original Enforcer, they came out with another version, which was the 93mm underfoot. Otherwise, the same sort of, you know, layout, length, everything. And I was reading some reviews on Pugski. They had some prototypes they were skiing on. I think Blister Review had some prototypes too. And they said that this thing was even better than the 100.
Wow.
So I got sick of waiting. I got a little antsy, and I pre-ordered them, bought them. And,
boom, pull the trigger.
Just pull the trigger without even demoing them. I just bought them.
He bought them. Where the hell were we?
And we were on the mountain.
Yeah.
You guys were going to the bathroom.
And he's got his credit card out. We're like, dude, you just bought your skis, didn't you?
I'm on the mountain. We were taking a little whiz break. I had my credit card out, and I'm, you know, calling the guy up. I had my headphones in my helmet, and I'm talking to the guy, and I, you know, gave him the credit card number, charged me, and I picked him up a few hours later.
Yeah, that's awesome.
They said they were oversold on all the skis they got in. And these are people, they haven't even demoed them, nothing. They were just...
Well, that was just people saying they wanted them reserved. And they're like, well, we can't really hold it unless you put money down.
Yeah.
And you were like, screw it. I'm a baller. I'm putting it down now.
I don't mess around.
Don't mess around.
I know what I want. And I wanted these skis. And I got them. And of course, you know, I got them. I went to the mountain and I'm in line and I'm like, oh, did I seriously just spend almost $1,000 on skis I've never tried before? Am I going to like them? Was it stupid? I mean, I have skis. They were
but
okay.
You really like the other ones, the 2016. So
I did like them and I like, you know, I want something a tiny bit narrower. 100 was good, but I want something a tiny bit narrower because I'm usually skiing East Coast. And these were, they were, after two or three turns, I was like, I love these skis. And after that, I've been on them for 2 weekends now, and they just get more and more fun as you get more comfortable with them. I mean, their edge-to-edge turning is amazing. They're based on a slalom ski, a Nordica racing ski, and you can really tell. They've got the metal in them, so they're stiff, but they're also kind of, they're still flexible and playful. I had a blast. And like I said, they must do the work for you on groomers.
Nice.
They know exactly what you want to do.
I remember the whole weekend after you got him, like, he's just like, just jumping into stuff, and I'm like,
bombing.
I'm like, all right, dude, just check yourself. You don't want to fuck yourself up before Jackson Hole. Come on, we got a big thing.
They were a blast. You know, moguls, Terrain Park. Well, we did one run in the trees, which was a little sketchy. You know, they're definitely a little bit you know, screwed up because of that. But it was I mean, that's what skis are for. But you're gonna get them messed up sooner or later.
I'm impressed.
So
you weren't a little baby about like, oh, the brand new skis, I don't want to go in the trees. Like, just jump in there, man.
You know what, it's like people who have like really nice cars and they don't want to drive them. It's like, why are you buying this awesome car to let it be a garage queen?
It's like the Jeep Renegade off-road trail rated edition that they never see off road.
Ah, you don't get mud on it. It's like, yeah. Stop it. That's,
you don't want to get mud on it.
That's what it's for.
You got the knobby wheels. You got to take that off road.
Yeah, so we hit it hard with those things. And I absolutely love these skis. They are fantastic.
That's awesome.
So I can't recommend them enough. Nordica Enforcer 93s, the 2017s, if you can even find them. You know,
maybe somebody could buy yours next year. Mayhaps.
Who knows what's going to happen, right?
You'll buy new ones and then they'll, you know. That's actually probably a good resale thing.
Probably, yeah.
In December, you're selling the 17s. Like, yeah, oh, yeah.
Old news. So, yeah, so they're a blast. So, if you, I also did a blog post, and it's on the website now if you want to take a look at it. It's kind of a review. It's more of me just kind of rambling and ranting and
showing off your skis.
Talking about my my purchasing process. So, it's kind of fun to write. And, yeah, it's out there if you guys want to check it out. SkiBumPodcast.com. That's right. You know the music. It is time for Around the Horn. And first up, check this out. Dutch police are training eagles to murder illegal drones.
Fuck yeah. That's what I gotta say.
Yes, sir. The Dutch National Police are using trained raptors to target consumer-sized drones and knock them out of the sky.
Oh, that's so awesome.
So I guess they're saying the Dutch police are concerned about drones being used for criminal purposes and have been working on ways to prevent unwanted drone use. So they have decided to train these birds to swoop in and knock these drones out of the sky.
Just take them out.
Take them out, yep.
I like it because they don't, like, kill it. They, like, grab it and, like, it's my drone now.
Yeah.
Like, you do whatever you want. I'm going to take the drone, too.
Hey, you know what? If there's been all kinds of stories of, you know, drones kind of interfering with, you know, public safety. And there's a story in California with that forest fire, how the drones were getting in the way and they couldn't drop the water to put out the fire because the drones were in the way. So you send in your eagles and you can knock out those drones.
Boom.
And you can get the job done.
I like that. Task Force Eagles. Boom. And they just zip in there and just take it all out.
Yeah. Working with nature.
And the funniest part of the video for me is it sounds like the chef from the Muppets. Because they're like Dutch. So they're like, woo da ha. I'm like, it's just funny. Funny to watch that.
Dutch has it's a very interesting language. Because
it is.
It's kind of like German mixed with sort of Scandinavian.
With a lot of swoopy, whirly sounds, which
is
pretty cool.
It's more of like a whimsical German.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so the Dutch are getting things done.
So all you hear is that, and then you see these eagles taking down drones. I'd love to see that.
Yeah.
So next we got Morocco just switched on the world's largest solar plant. So it's this gigantic like field of like reflectors that they just put online. And reading the article, I was like, well, that's pretty cool. They're going to, you know, provide enough power to power. I think they're saying it's churning out 160 megawatts, which when you...
Not quite 1.21 gigawatts.
Gigawatts. Not a lot of gigawatts, but megawatts. So they're saying it's going to power a good part of the of Morocco, which is a small little country, a little petite country. But
they're saying it could generate 30%.
That's a lot
of the country's power.
Yeah,
is that right? No, that's not quite right. 30% of its electricity from renewables over the same period of time.
Well, so they're saying 2030. The ambition is once it's fully operational, they want to generate 42% of its electricity from renewables. So,
well, you know what? I mean, a place like Morocco, it's that close to the equator. It makes a lot of sense to try to harness solar energy.
Yeah.
You know, now that it's finally becoming kind of viable for, you know, places to use it, and they're able to generate enough electricity and power from them.
But the interesting thing about it, so when you read it, it's like, so they're not just like grabbing the sun and doing whatever. They're actually using, so they're grabbing the sun and they're having it focused on heating oil to extremely high temperatures. Now, in the oil, they have salt. And the salt melts at like, I think they said 500 degrees.
Celsius, yeah.
Celsius.
932 Fahrenheit.
Fahrenheit. In massive tanks. So they're actually melting the salt suspended in this oil to that high a temperature and storing it. So they actually say what they actually wind up doing is using that to generate, I guess, run generators and generate electricity. So it runs all day. And because they store that in the tanks at such a hot temperature, they can actually produce electricity when the sun goes down. So they're actually saying they're going to get, I think they said, they hope to get about 20 hours worth of actual production of solar energy per day.
That's so cool.
Which is incredible. So they're actually, you know, doing that when they don't even have sun. So it's pretty neat.
That's amazing, yeah.
They got a huge investment from World Bank and big German investment bank. So, like, a lot of people in Europe are looking at this. And it's kind of great because after a lot of the regulations they passed down from the last big summit, I think a lot of countries committed to certain benchmarks.
Mm-hmm.
So they're actually, you know, everybody's looking at, like, everybody's going to help each other out to get there, you know, pretty much. So pretty cool.
Way to go, Morocco.
Also the reason that oil is dropping like a rock, like a stone. So if you have any oil investables, thank you, Mario. I do. I did. I had to sell mine this week. But after companies started announcing they're going bankrupt. But anyway.
Allegedly. Oil futures.
Oil futures.
Nice. All right, next up. So this was a crazy story.
It's pretty messed up.
California.
I had to reread the headline a few times.
Coyotes are attacking cars, possibly due to magic mushrooms.
Damn.
Yeah, so there's some crazy incidents happening out in Marin County in Northern California. There's been coyotes that are staring down automobiles.
Damn.
You know, while drivers are driving through twisty, turning sections of Highway 1. And these coyotes are actually running up to the car, usually at night, and they're staring and sniffing around the vehicle and kind of attacking at the car.
Damn.
And at first they were like, well, you know, is it possible that maybe it's, you know, rabies, that there's all these, like, you know, rabid animals there? But they said that it's, you know, they would be dead in a couple of weeks, and it's really rare for coyotes to have rabies. And they're saying that it's possible that these coyotes have been ingesting the is it agaric mushroom, the Amanita muscaria, and hallucinating.
Damn.
So these coyotes are like tripping their balls off just encountering these cars and trying to attack them, which is crazy.
I almost thought they're like walking up to cars, be like, "Yo, man, I will suck your."
That's if they were smoking crack. I don't think these coyotes have figured out crack quite yet.
It's only if they're in the hood.
Yeah. So wow. I don't know. What I'm trying to figure out from this article is, are people feeding them the mushrooms, or are they kind of growing in that area and they're just kind of, you know,
let's say it's a beautiful,
gobbling them up?
Let's say it's a beautiful night. You have a convertible. You're driving down the road. Some coyotes jumping up and taking you out, man. That's crazy. Oh, man.
That's like a convertible commercial right there. Or a non-convertible commercial.
What a terrible way to go.
Terrible. I'm driving down, man. Just minding my own business. This goddamn coyote's high as a kite. Just takes me out.
That sounds like the next Hummer commercial.
That's right. Yeah.
It's like
bringing back the
cruising
Hummer.
In a convertible, and a coyote comes in and like starts eating them. It's like Hummer.
Yeah, right.
So the Hummer like just mauling over, like running over the coyotes.
The Hummer guy is driving down. All you hear is bump, bump. That's it. Hummer.
Screw you, hippie coyote. Hummer.
Let's hear bump.
Yeah.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah, so again, I'm trying to figure this out. I don't know if I missed it in the article, but I don't know if people are giving the coyotes the mushrooms or they just found them growing naturally, because these mushrooms do grow naturally in certain places.
Are the people eating the mushrooms and then thinking they see it?
Are the people eating the mushrooms and the coyotes eating the people, thus getting the mushrooms via the people?
Maybe the rabbits are eating the mushrooms and the coyotes eat the rabbits, therefore ingesting the mushrooms.
Ipso facto.
Ipso facto.
Yes.
Maybe an ipso facto in there.
That's possible.
Oh, and sticking with that theme, why don't you get the next one?
Can pot make you a better athlete? So this was a pretty cool article that I found in Outside Magazine. And the writer of the article is a runner and was talking about, some articles they read and some studies that came out to see if, you know, can pot be beneficial in athletics? So the person who wrote the article, it is, let me see the name of the person wrote it, Gordy Megraz, and talked about how, you know, never really been a pot smoker, but took a hit of marijuana and then jumped on the treadmill to see how it affects athletic performance. So what he did notice was that he didn't focus on the pain as much during like a long run. And there's a study that came out how pots, this is actually from 1975, that those who smoked pot experienced a 25% decrease in power output. And that another study came out that said that people who ingested THC lost motor skills and decreased reaction time. But still, the World Anti-Doping Association bans cannabis during competition, citing studies that say the drug decreases anxiety, potentially helping athletes stay calm in the heat of competition and act as a bronchodilator, which increases airflow to the lungs.
I mean, I could see some of that. It relaxes you, basically.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
So it's not going to help your performance per se, but it may help your pain and relaxation, which is very important. Like, that, it's kind of a power swing. Because if you get anxiety while you're doing something, mm-hmm. or like you, like I feel it when I bike. If I'm going up a big hill and your breathing rhythm gets out of whack, and you breathe too much, you actually crap out. Like you redline and just bonk. But if you kind of control that breathing a little bit more, you got a better chance. You got a little more power, you got a little more juice left.
Yeah, it's cool. It also talks about how, being topical, it says some close friends who also happen to be really good skiers swear that the drug improves their skills on the mountains, claiming that they can, quote, feel the snow better.
I feel it, man. I feel
so
the snow.
So it talks
man.
About how you popped a THC gummy and experienced a slight yet very functional high, but something else stood out. I felt invincible and proceeded to attack the steepest lines without fear.
Nice.
Yeah. So that
could be good and bad.
So the effect is that we have these cannabinoid receptors throughout our brains, and when the THC hits those receptors, it triggers a system that reduces anxiety. Which is funny, because a lot of times people who take edibles tend to just have this like massive anxiety.
It depends when you take it. Like, so I can speak from personal experience. I think when you take a lot, I think it depends on the frame of mind you're in. I think it enhances that. So yeah. I was like exhausted that time, and I was just kind of like, I got more exhausted and a little, whatever, paranoid. But I think it was just the frame of mind I was in.
Yeah. I know I have possibly partaken in a little bit of cannabis in, of course, a state where it's legal naturally.
Course.
Before going out, and one thing I notice is like I just feel I'm more comfortable. Like they says, like you feel the snow better. I felt almost like I was one with the mountain. I'm like, okay, the mountain has set this path for me, and I'm not gonna fight the mountain. I'm just gonna dance with the mountain. You know, like I'm gonna be. It's gonna tell me where to go. You know, so you almost feel like connected to nature more. Right. At least that's the reaction that I had to it.
Is that time you were hugging that rock and like we were like, what the hell is going on?
Where'd he go, man?
What's going on, man?
Yeah. So yeah, it's pretty interesting. I mean, you know, we're gonna see a lot of changes happening in the next few years. I think. Well, it's pretty obvious now that a lot of places are starting to legalize it, and we're gonna see a big change in perception. It seems like, and especially with people like Chris Christie dropping out of the presidential election. Aw, see ya. And with people like Bernie Sanders winning caucuses now, it's starting to get real possible that someone like a Bernie, who said he's going to, you know, federally decriminalize marijuana, we're going to see a lot of people, you know, partaking in it more and more studies coming out and getting more knowledge, which I think is really the most important thing. People understanding the truth and not just this kind of...
I'd like to see more studies on this whole athlete thing.
Yeah, we're going to actually be able to see these studies because right now it's a stage one drug, which means it has no medical benefits, so you can't do studies on it.
Can't even fund it.
Right.
But that'd be cool.
Once they change that, well, all these kind of like Reagan, Nixon era kind of, you know, bullshit beliefs are going to go out the window, and people are going to, you know, get real scientific evidence of, you know, positives and negatives, which I think is important.
Yeah, I think they say for not just athletics, but if it calms you down, why not, instead of taking Prozac or Zoloft or...
Even getting hammered. Instead of having like 3-4 beers, you know, have a couple of, a pot brownie or a couple of vapes and, you know...
It works.
Chill out and go to sleep, yeah.
Cool.
So, cool story.
All right, so moving into scotch. We got 8 little-known facts and common misconceptions about single malt scotches.
This is our last story of the week, too.
This is it. We're rounding it up.
This is it.
And there's multiple stories within this story. So
make it count.
Make it count.
Do it right.
So everybody knows there's a little magic that goes into every bottle of single malt scotch. So there's a little alchemy that goes in there, a little craftiness that goes in from the makers of it. And there's some interesting statistics. So... they're saying the top drinkers – where is this? I don't want to mess this up. So France consumes more Scotch whiskey, including blends and single malts, than any other country, which is pretty interesting. And then U.S. by far drinks the most single malt Scotch, is the volume leader.
Is that because we're the most baller country?
Most baller. So, you know, they go through some – you know, I'll let you guys read this the information, but you know, they talk about Scotch actually starts as a clear spirit. Color comes from the cask. Also depends on how long you age it. Like beer and wine, single malt whiskeys are limited to single style, and they extend beyond the normal, what everybody thinks the flavors are.
Well, so you're saying it starts as a clear spirit. That's pretty much the like if you were like a moonshine, like a White Lightning. That's
right.
That's how it starts.
Plain,
yeah. Just the distilled.
And, you know, it's just like you talk about wine. If you crush grapes and you make wine without letting it sit with the skins, you get white wine. If you let it sit with the skins, you get red wine. Hmm. It comes from the skins. It's what it sits in. So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty cool. They talk to you about, they mention a lot of things. The peat, the peat flavor. It's known in a lot of whiskies because the way they dry out the grain with they do it with peat. Mm-hmm. And that smoke gets in there and it gets that smoky peat flavor, but that's not all of them, so it's a common misconception that all of them have that peat flavor. Not all of them do.
Those are more of the ones like the Islay scotches.
It actually,
those tend to be more peaty.
It just depends on the process they use. So it really isn't even related to that. Like, they even talk about it in this little article. So it's pretty interesting. And then on a side note, so they mention it in this article. They mention Travel and Leisure they have a site called Scotch Stories. And they actually go through, like, 5 really good scotches. And they talk about, like, how they're made, where they're from. And it's a lot of cool information. I got to say, they have, like, pictures and, pictures of the breweries and of the distilleries, and it's pretty neat. Little videos and stuff like that. So it's a pretty cool site. And then I also have on there, I'm reading this book now called Proof, The Science of Booze.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little bit technical in terms of why they talk about why the fermentation happens, why you get certain reactions to make alcohol, to, you know, and what goes into the process. And it actually spans not just scotch and whiskey and bourbon and what the differences are, but also goes into beer and wine and even sake, which is a pretty big thing. So it's interesting to see, like, you know, the full spectrum of, you know, here's what the misconceptions of scotches are, and here's what you should know about scotch when you look for it and drink it. And then you look at the Travel and Leisure story, and they actually show you the places, and you get a feel for, like, what, you know, where they make them and what it's all about. And then, like, the book kind of wraps it up of, like, okay, here's the science behind, like, what goes into all this stuff. So it's pretty neat stuff.
You know, to me, I just still find it so fascinating that someone figured out how to do this. You know, they take these ingredients, leave them in a barrel for X number of years, and to have the patience. I mean, I wonder how it even happened. Like, did someone forget about the barrel and be like, oh, man, we forgot to drink this barrel. And then it's like five years later, and they're like, whoa, this got a lot better. Maybe we should do this again and leave it for even longer.
Yeah.
And you think about it. So a 12-year scotch, I mean, they've been making this for what? How many hundreds of years have they been making scotch? Does it mention that at all in the books?
Over hundreds, yeah.
What was the average lifespan back then?
Oh, in the book? In the book, they've been making it for, like, tons of years. Like, we're talking decades.
Like, millennia.
Centuries.
Right? Centuries.
Millennia, yeah.
So let's say 1,000 years ago, they were making it. What was the average lifespan 1,000 years ago? 30 years? 40 years?
25, 30, yeah.
You know? So you're putting this, you know, presumably in a barrel for half your lifetime.
Yeah.
So, if you make it the day you're born.
So while I'm reading the book, they're going through, like, a lot of stuff that goes into the flavor is it's the type of yeast that you use. So the yeast, every yeast is a little bit different. They process the sugars a little bit different and have a little bit different of an output. So that yeast really drives a lot of the flavor, but it doesn't drive the only flavor. It depends on what you put into that yeast that drives it. So that's why it's such a complicated mix of, you know, you could have somebody use the same yeast, the same mash, you know, same wort, the same everything to make a beer, for example, and you just make it at different temperatures, they taste totally different.
Yeah.
Or you have the same recipe, different yeast, totally different. You know what I mean? So it's just all these variables, which makes it such a great creative, like, spectrum, like, to go into.
That's why it's never the same, too, whichever, you know, I mean, they get pretty close, but, you know, it's always be a tiny bit off.
Yeah, they actually do a lot of quality. So they're talking about, I know they have grain banks, grain vaults. Mm-hmm. They actually have, for yeast, they have yeast vaults. So they actually have these companies that are set up. One of them's in England that they talk about in the book, where they actually will store the yeast on, you know, frozen, because yeast freezes very well and thaws out very well.
Yeah.
So they actually freeze it so that they say after a few generations of, you know, propagating yeast from the yeast that they have, it starts mutating. You know, yeast likes to generally mutate, and mm-hmm. that's what's good about it, is you can get something good and different out of it. But if you want that same flavor and same taste, every, like, dozens of years or so,
it's almost impossible.
They actually go back to the frozen and start with that again.
Oh, really?
It's the most interesting thing. Or if they have a big kill off in their brewery, there was one example of, they had a big flood and it killed off all the yeast. So they're like, we're done, because we don't have that same yeast. You can't even find that yeast in nature. You have to, like, look, search for that same yeast. So they actually had some stored in one of these banks, and they got it back and then grew it, and they were up and running again in a few months.
It's almost like having, like, your servers, like, backed up, like, somewhere else, like, you know, offsite or another country or somewhere else.
It's crazy. And they have, I've looked into, they have seed banks too, for the same reason. Like, if you grow seed and you need
like a grape or something, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, anything. I mean, tomatoes, you know, whatever. Like, they have seed banks in, like, I think there's, like,
OG Kush.
Seven giant seed banks in the world. Yeah. Like, just in case there's a catastrophe.
Wasn't it, like, probably like NORAD, like, they have, like, in Colorado buried in the ground or something? Yeah. The seed banks.
Oh, yeah. It's really, like, and they have countries send them seeds from all over the world. It's like Noah's Ark of seed. It's pretty crazy. Yeah.
Wouldn't it be the craziest thing if they, the most amazing scotch ever, and they actually use yeast infection as, like, the yeast for it?
They actually said, I'm reading in the book, they actually said that some of the, before refining the whole rum process, mm-hmm. which is really like a cool process now. Rum companies used to take and they used to throw like their leftover mash from barrels into this pit. And it was like a sludge pit. And they used to just leave it there for years. And they just keep throwing stuff in there. Mm-hmm. And then they would take stuff out of there and put that into some of the batches. Because the yeast will kill off any germs.
Yeah.
And it will take the funky, crazy enzymes that are developed and use them. You know, they wanted to get that into there to see if something came out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And every once in a while, they get something really good at it. But they didn't know what it was.
They never know.
Throw stuff
yeah.
in there. So then they got it down to more of a scientific process to what they have now. And it's like, it's really good, but it's just interesting the stuff they used to do, like to get there. It's all trial and error.
Yeah.
Everybody thinks it's precise, and they're like, no, we just know that we do this, and this is what we get out of it, because there's no rhyme or reason that we can figure it out.
It's crazy, too, that, you know, you think about Scotland being kind of the best scotch. Well, obviously, scotch is from Scotland, but like the best whiskey in the world pretty much comes from Scotland. And it's just, you know, the perfect ingredients were just located in that particular spot to make that, you know?
Yeah.
It had to have the peat. You had to have the water. You had to have the grain. Everything had to be there.
They say the water is huge, too.
The water's – we talked about how many Vermont beers have we talked about over this podcast, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of it's got to be because of the water up there, you know?
Yeah.
The ingredients, the water. I mean, the water's – I mean, what's that, 90% of the beverages usually, the
yeah.
water? It's just cool that kind of worked out the way. Because imagine if, okay, say they didn't have peat bogs in Scotland. Say they just had cannabis growing there. You're making like...
Smoke it with cannabis.
Smoke it with cannabis.
Boom.
Well, how would that have changed the Scottish culture?
Be a little skunky.
That happened.
Skunky stuff.
Skunky.
Our palates might be totally different. That's the other thing, right?
People may be more chill. Maybe Scotland is like Silicon Valley now, if they had that.
Yeah, you never know.
You never know.
Well, the other thing, too, that, like, they're talking about aging, right? So you have a beer that's bourbon barrel aged or something like that, and it changes the flavor so much, right? So they're actually talking about, they say Altmore is very sweet, like a 12-year-old Altmore. Sweet liquid, verdant nose, dewy moss, and delicate flora. You take the 18-year-old version of that same Altmore, the sweetness becomes velvety.
Velvet Jones.
And becomes like soft melon and surly hues. So it's just like a totally different
amazing.
Liquid.
It's amazing, yeah.
For a few years more of aging.
Complete transformation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
It's so fascinating, too. And, you know, it's funny. As you get older, like when you're younger, you just want to get, like, hammered. That's the most important thing when you're drinking
PBRs.
Something. PBRs, bro. And as you get older, you really do appreciate the whole process of, you know, what you're drinking and why you're drinking it and how it came to be. I mean, because it really is just a fantastic, you know, kind of chemistry science experiment that they've actually come up with and made this and can repeat it over time.
Yeah.
And I mean, just the aging process. I mean, what's your favorite? Like, if you had to pick like one bottle of, you know, any sort of whiskey, what would it be? Like with a reason. Like, not, I'm not saying like a. I mean, we had the 30-year Macallan that one time,
that was damn
which
good.
Is now a $2,000 a bottle scotch.
I mean, I'm a bourbon drinker just because mm-hmm. I like the flavor a little bit more.
Oh, bourbon.
Oh, bourbon. I think, I've had like Glenlivet, like 18. It's pretty good. But I like the 18, not the 12. I don't like the older one either.
They're
like,
all
I like
different.
The 18.
Yeah.
It's just like even port. Like I remember I was in this mode where I was just tasting port wines for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And Taylor Flaggate makes one. They make a 20. I've had a 20, 30, 10, and whatever else. My favorite is the 20. People are like, oh, you don't like the 30? I'm like, I just don't like the flavor. It's like too sweet. It ruins it for me. It
changes, yeah.
You know? Like mine young.
Yeah.
Keep it young.
Yeah. So for me, my go-to scotch is the Macallan 18. That's like my...
Ooh, nice.
I absolutely love that scotch. Macallan. I just killed off the bottle that I had. I had a bottle for about 2 years, drinking only on special occasions. And it's now gone. And one thing I noticed is how crazy the price has gone up on scotch in the last, like, 2 years.
Yeah.
I mean, you can find that bottle for 170 maybe. Now it's everywhere I'm looking, it's at least 200. So I'm a big Macallan guy. And it's funny, like, I don't love – the 12's okay. The 15 and 17 are kind of eh. I actually like the 10 almost better. I like the 10 better than the 15 and the 17. But
yeah.
The 18 is just the best.
Wow.
And then the 20, I think I've, what's the other one I've had? I had the 21, and that was amazing. 25, haven't had. The 30, we had that one time.
And the 27. 20, it was under 30. It was a 20.
No, they were 25.
25 then we had. Yeah.
And that's $1,000 a bottle now. Yeah. That was $625 a couple of years ago. Hmm. So, yeah, it's magical stuff. And, I mean, think about it. That was in a barrel for 30 years just waiting. Yeah. People were patient enough to just let it sit and chill and do its thing.
Well, bourbon or scotch or something like I'm a very big, like, mood person. So, like, if you're in the mood for one, like, there's some that I have in my head that I'm like, if I want a nice bourbon, I'll have a bullet. Like, that's my go-to, right? But there are times that I don't want to have that. I want a Blanton's because it has a different flavor.
Yeah.
Or Whistle Pig. Like,
Basil Hayden.
Basil. I love Basil
Hayden. I had
this
weekend.
Yeah. Love Basil Hayden.
Delicious.
But it's like something about it. Like, that flavor is just right that time, you know?
Yeah.
I like having a few in the holster to say, yeah, I want that now. It's like I do that with gin. Like, if I'm having like a gin and tonic, I'll have Beefeater, Tanqueray. That's it. If I'm having a martini, I usually have like Dirty Martini or regular martini. Bombay Sapphire is my preference. You know what I mean? But like...
No Hendrix?
Hendrix with cucumber and sometimes Hendrix with...
Cucumber martini, yeah. Those are nice.
Yeah. These little cucumber in there. But that's... You got to be in the mood for that, you know? So it's like, depending on the mood you're in, it's kind of... It's good to know what you want.
That's why it's always key to have a fully stocked bar. Because you never know what you're going to be in the mood for. Or when you have a party that happens at your place, you got to have... You got to be prepared. You know, prepared.
Yeah. Or when you go, they actually talk, I got to look this up because there's two places in the city that the guy mentions in the book, at the beginning of the book, where these guys are phenomenal mixologists. There's one guy that actually has a preference for how much carbonation in his club soda he has in his bar. Whoa. So everything imparts in it. So he, like, he won't make a regular drink. They're like all phenomenal drinks. So I got to look that up because I love like mixology and like that whole like, because we've gone to like great bars where like you get, I don't really care if it's a $20 cocktail. Mm-hmm. If it's a really craft made great cocktail, you taste it and you're just like, this is freaking awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's no, you know, club soda and you know, vodka club or, you know, it's no crap regular drink.
Yeah.
It's not bad. Not bad once in a while, but like you taste it and you're like, well, there's something else. And, you know, they did some stuff to that.
Yeah.
So it's cool.
Well, that was a nice little booze conversation we had there.
We got to go out for cocktails. We got to have cocktail night.
Yeah. That'd be good. That's what you need to do one of these podcast days, have a little cocktail action going on.
You have to hit some places in the city.
Yeah.
I got to find that place in the book. We got to go there.
Sounds good to me. All right. Well, that finally wraps it up. So take two went well. This actually is recording. Thank God. We'll put this out. Probably have it out Thursday for you guys to check it out. So hopefully you'll enjoy.
Working twice as hard for everybody.
I know, because we love you guys that much. So thank you so much for listening. Check out all of our information, SkiBonePodcast.com, Facebook.com/SkiBonePodcast, Twitter.com/SkiBonePodcast, Instagram.com/SkiBonePodcast. Go on to Stitcher, subscribe. Go on to iTunes, subscribe. Rate us, please. Let us know what you think. And we will come back next week. We are prepping for Jackson Hole, so that's what the podcast is going to be all about. And we will check you guys out next week.
Stay high, stay polluting.
See ya.